This ASI cast is about blockchain. There are terms thrown around in our industry, and often these refer to things that have actually been around for some time and have just been rediscovered, renamed, and presented as something novel and transformative. Blockchain is different, as it really does hold out the promise of radically changing the way we conduct our business. And in this interview, our research director, Richard Marks, asks Oliver Pischke, product director TGI at Kantar Media, to explain in terms we can all understand how it is likely to do so.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Oliver. I'm going to leap straight in and ask you to give your take on what the word blockchain actually means in the simplest sense, because it's cropped up increasingly at ASI conferences and in various recent podcasts, and people nod knowledgeably and say, oh yes, blockchain, yes, that's going to have an effect. But to rewind slightly, in the simplest terms, what is your take on what blockchain actually means in terms of the practical implications for us?
Thank you, Richard. Well, in essence, the blockchain is, for value and assets, what the internet is for information. It's probably best known as the technology that's underlying under cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or Ethereum, and it's a way to exchange value, trust between strangers, people who want to remain anonymous, and do that in a very secure way, and cutting out and also enables people to cut out the middlemen like banks, notaries, credit card companies, etc. So in essence, it allows value to be exchanged and stored in a very secure and privacy compliant way. It does that by, and if I'm using any tech terms that you think should be explained any deeper, let me know. So it uses strong cryptography to keep those exchanges secure. It is setting up a what can be described as a decentralized database, which is called the digital ledger, mm-hmm. where all those transactions are recorded and are visible to anyone in that network. And that network is basically a group or a chain, that's the blockchain, of computers that must approve the exchange of value before it can be verified and recorded. It also includes a set of business rules, which are contract terms and allow us to automate transactions. Those are called smart contracts. So they can be seen as something that two parties agree on that are frozen into code and that govern the exchange of value.
So in simplest terms then, the phrase I've used or had used in conversations when I've been discussing it is distributed ledger, the idea that effectively it's a means of exchanging, as you say, value, which I'm assuming is primarily but not exclusively money. It could be things of value, and that you are effectively, by decentralizing it, making it secure because you've got, as you say, a chain of computers, which I guess, you know, has some similarities with the original idea of the internet being a chain of computers. So is it primarily about finance, or are there other applications?
Well, as you said, it's about value. And of course, money has value, but goods have value, services have value. And nowadays, when we are talking about the internet and one of its primary sources of making money is the attention of users. So also the attention of users is of value. So anything that has a price tag to it or has some value can be exchanged on the blockchain.
So are there some similarities with, you don't hear the phrase so much nowadays, but peer-to-peer, in the early days of video, you would be exchanging videos of obviously legally obtained videos, but perhaps sometimes not, that were kind of bits of the videos were stored across the various computers of the people who had either played them or uploaded them, that you were distributing the files across various computers. Is that an analogy with blockchain?
It's a very it's a simple analogy, as in it is using a distributed peer-to-peer network to establish that blockchain, to establish that network of trust between the various computers. So also the data that is stored on the blockchain is distributed. So there is no centralized instance of any computer, at least not in public blockchains, of which Bitcoin and Ethereum are the prime examples. So there is no central instance, so it can be compared to peer-to-peer network, where there's also no server as such that is keeping the data in one place, but instead it's distributed across a number of computers.
In theory, as I understand it, that's what gives it its security. But funnily enough, I was talking to some family members at the weekend who were talking about internet banking and the fact they still didn't trust the internet for banking and went to their local branch and paid in checks, when I was slightly surprised at. But then I said, oh yes, but blockchain is going to sort all that out because it's secure. To which their answer was, well, is anything ever secure? What makes this incapable of being subverted, hacked, changed, whatever? Everyone's saying, oh, it's incredible, you just can't, you cannot undermine it. But what makes it impossible? Surely at some point someone will figure out how to hack blockchain or distort it or do something to it.
Well, actually, that has happened a couple of times, and the damage done was significant. So blockchain on its own, when we're talking about the network of trust, is pretty secure. So whenever someone transmits a transaction, a token to that distributed nodes in the network, make sure that the transaction is valid, or that there are sufficient funds. So, this allows it to be verified. What it makes it, in principle, very tamper-proof is a cryptographic fingerprint that is unique to each block representing a transaction, which may be the transfer of funds, and the cryptography used here is pretty strong. As you know, one of the ideas that people always have on Bitcoin is that the value represented by Bitcoin is actually the energy and the computing power that is put into it. So, and that is significant, and it gets harder and harder. So the cryptography itself is pretty hard to break. Although it's not completely true that this is the value of the Bitcoin. And the other thing is that there's a consensus protocol. So basically all the nodes in the blockchain agreeing on a shared history. So you cannot just alter some block, some hash, so some cryptographic value of a block. You would have to change it for the whole blockchain, which makes it economically unviable to do so. In theory, so whenever you change something, you would have to change everything, every subsequent block to that. But I mean, there are some ways to cheat even on the blockchain. I'm not going to be going into details for that, but there's technology. basically the possibility make other nodes in your network do unnecessary work, and thereby getting more value attributed to your own node, or to take other nodes off the network. But in all the hacks to the blockchain, and with the biggest one being actually a hack to a Japanese-based company called CoinCheck, where the heist took about $500 million worth of cryptocurrency, happen where the blockchain meets people. So everywhere you have a connection to non-blockchain-based applications, like, for example, the wallets where people's money is kept, or what I talked about before, the smart contracts, there is a possible point of entry for people who want to play the network and who want to steal money.
Ah, okay. So if we get rid of the human being element, then it is perfect. So if it's computers exchanging value with other computers without human beings being involved, either making mistakes or trying to hack it, then it would be perfect. Although
it would be a perfect world, yes.
It would, although it wouldn't be a world in which we'd serve any function at all.
We may be looking at that anyway in a couple of years' time. So,
well, it reminds me of that someone, we used to have a cartoon about the, you may have seen it, about the market research company in the future, which would basically just be a man, a computer, and a dog, and the computer would do all the work, and the dog would make sure the man didn't touch the computer. That would be how it would work. But obviously, that's useful. So I'm getting a better understanding now of what blockchain is. Specifically, obviously, we're a podcast focused on advertising and audience measurement. I guess there's two possible applications there. One is benefits that blockchain could have, and I'm sure may already be being reviewed or adapted for use for the buying and selling of advertising, particularly as we seem to be moving more towards real-time bidding and programmatic systems that are happening, you know, in the blink of a second anyway. I'm assuming blockchain would play a big role in that exchange of value.
It should, and it eventually will, but currently what we have to say is that the speed at which transaction can move through the blockchain is not really sufficient for that. So the time it takes to place an advertising, an advertisement, is much, much shorter than it takes for a block to make it through the blockchain to get verified. So that's a question of resource that will eventually be solved. But yeah, right now we are not quite there. But there's a lot of other applications in the space of online advertising where blockchain comes into play nowadays.
Interesting. So you think it will get there, but at the moment it's the speed of real-time exchanges is actually faster than blockchain's ability to keep up with actually administering the transactions.
At least economically. I mean, there's a bunch of startups in that area currently that are promising to solve the obvious problems that the online advertising ecosystem currently suffers from. It, you know, it used to be something that was pretty clear cut. You had advertisers, you had publishers, and you had users. And nowadays, if you look at it, or when you look at it, you have so many middlemen in there. So you have the ad exchanges, the DMPs, the DSPs, the SSPs, what have you. You've got the, you know, all that very complicated collection of data. You have all that people trying to make sense of that big data, as we call it today. You have that idea of audience segmentation, and then all in this is who has nothing from it. Is actually the user. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people making money from it, but the people who are actually the recipients and who are giving their attention in a world where you have so much information, you know, everybody is flooded with so much information, and therefore it gets always harder and therefore more precious to get people's attention to anything. We all know that. And I mean, it's something that is strongly supported by a lot of findings from our industry. But nevertheless, we are not remunerating users adequately for their attention. And that is something actually where the blockchain can play a very significant role, also already short term, by cutting out the middlemen, allowing users to put their digital persona safely, securely, and privacy compliant out on the blockchain, and allow advertisers and publishers to get access to it. And then you are in a situation where you can exchange value directly. So someone, and there's actually technical implementations for that, without wanting to name any companies. I don't know whether I should or whether I shouldn't, Richard.
Let's err on the side of you perhaps shouldn't. But
okay.
Company X,
for example, is offering a browser plugin or a plugin for mobile apps that will allow users to say, "Hey, I'm George. I'm 47 years old, and I'm in the market for life insurance," and then. Advertisers can have access to that information without, we won't actually know that he's George, but they can get access to that information, remunerate the user for his attention, and then, you have that's also a beautiful thing about the blockchain or cryptocurrencies, that you have, very, very minute payments. You don't need to accumulate a lot of money for it to be worthwhile to be paid out. So you can remunerate people directly, and they can then spend that money, for example, to, again, remunerate publishers for their services. So that's basically one of the application for the blockchain that you currently have today in the online advertising world. Thereby you're also cutting out that incredibly high transaction cost that you have today because of all the middlemen, because of all the fraud that you have. The blockchain can make that a lot easier.
Yeah. Isn't it potentially, though, at an extreme, if you've got a situation where individuals are able to directly monetize their own personal data with advertisers or companies, doesn't that effectively disintermediate or cut out the research agencies who up to now have been the conduit for gathering together groups of those people, selling them as samples and making money? If in a way you could imagine a situation where everyone's their own market research company with a sample of one, me, that I sell him via blockchain in return for goods and services, and where does that leave companies like Kantar Media there?
Let's see how we are making our money, and I'd say that probably not only Kantar Media, but most other companies out there are making a good share of their money nowadays from collecting data, and that is potentially going to go away with the blockchain, but because there won't be as much money for researchers to collect that data. So the blockchain will make it even more important than nowadays that researchers add insights to this rather than merely gathering data. So I think there is going to be a continuous role for researchers, but it's definitely going to be transformed by the blockchain.
There's one final, I'm sure there are many others, but one final area I'd quite like to discuss with regard to blockchain, which is the industry currencies. It kind of circles back round because we started off talking about currencies in the sense of literal financial ones, but the media trading currencies for TV, radio, print, etc. are referred to as currencies because there is a very clear value to a ratings point or a readership figure or a number of listeners that determines how much money advertisers pay in order to have their adverts on a particular group or a particular TV station or radio group. So I guess the question would be, how blockchain has applications for the way that currencies are organized. The reason I mention this is that in a recent episode, I think it was episode 69 of the ASI cast, we talked with JFK, who'd done an industry consultation and come back with three possible futures for the currencies, one of which was a decentralized future where effectively blockchain, as they described it, was joining together, you know, Sky's data with BBC's data with Channel 4's data, and, you know, in a as you call it, a, you know, a relationship of trust, and creating a currency effectively, you know, decentralized, kind of almost, you know, leaving the JIX to simply just verify what came out of the other end of the machine. Do you see that as a possible application for blockchain, quite literally being part of the system whereby an audience measurement currency is gathering, checking, verifying, and putting out data that people have trust in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that is a very likely scenario where at the beginning I talked about various different types of blockchain, and one of the blockchains is the permission-based blockchain, which is not a public blockchain, but something where different players in an industry come together and organize a blockchain where they are becoming nodes in the network of trust, each contributing their share via smart contracts to something like a currency. It's absolutely conceivable that we will be seeing this happen in the not so distant future, where you have those instances, value being moved around based on the smart contracts between the various partners, and each of them verifying in a way that certain criteria for the data have been met, and it would definitely transform the nature and the raison d'être of joint industry committees. Yeah, there are some more immediate applications in the world of currencies. You will be commissioning your research to an agency or to a number of agencies or to a daisy chain of agencies, and you're going to have a lot of discussions around service level agreements. Have certain criteria have been met? Is the data accurate, etc., etc.? And also, already blockchain nowadays can help us execute against SLAs. So, for example, instead of having, because in most cases, the company that is bringing forth the service is going to be monitoring the service. So, with smart contracts in the blockchain, you can actually have a distributed network of trust that is monitoring the execution against SLAs, and that is going to make life potentially a lot easier, not only for joint industry committees but also for joint industry committees.
Well, having sat through three and a half, four years of Barb SLA meetings with a former hat on, I can certainly say that if blockchain's able to make that more seamless or frictionless, I think the phrase would be, then that would be brilliant.
There simply won't be any discussion anymore. You just lay down the law and say, this is it, certain conditions are met, and you can even break this down into very microscopic payments. You know, you can organize the whole execution of a JIG contract on a distributed ledger using smart contracts.
Good Lord.
Sounds like science fiction, but it's doable.
Yeah, and then we can all go and do other things. The computers will just get everything done. Brilliant. Well, that's a really useful insight into where we are with blockchain at the moment. I won't do a poll of listeners afterwards. I think I actually understood about 95%, which is a record for me in blockchain conversations. So thank you for that, and hopefully we'll speak to you perhaps in a few months or a few years and see how this is developing. But in the meantime, thanks for making the time to speak to us, Oliver.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. Bye, Richard.
Bye.